Hello! Welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid?
What? I'm good. What's Shawnee Shawn, the White Devil, saying?
Well, he's having to watch his words because he's now talking to someone who is part of Her Majesty's Armed Forces.
MOD, Ministry of Defence. That's me right there.
What have they let themselves in for?
Shh, I'm a double agent. Don't tell no one.
So it went well, your test on the weekend?
It was crazy easy. Originally, there was 12 recruits that were supposed to turn up
for the fitness,
which is the last stage because there's like 6 stages. And everyone bottled it. So I turned up and I was the only one there.
What?
Yeah, it was crazy. So they said, oh, we're going to stick you in with this squadron doing fitness. You know, it's like regular fitness. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So it's just like all sort of these young guys. And we're in the gym ready to do bleep test. And they're all like going, oh. So they're all moaning at the sergeant saying, oh, can we take it easy today, Sarge? Oh. And they said, look, I've got to do level 8 on the bleep. So they said, everyone's got to do minimum level 8.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I put my hand up. I said, oh, but if I beat them, they have to do extra press ups and stuff. And he laughed. He says, no, I've seen your record. He says, apparently you used to be a good runner.
And did you beat them all? Of course you did.
We had to run in the sink. So, you know, like you were to run together, wait at the line, run back.
Yeah.
I was surprised how easy it was. It was only like 15 meter. In the like, it wasn't the 20 meters.
Okay.
So it's like super easy.
Yeah.
And then level 9, they actually stopped at level 9. They didn't let you carry on because they said, "Oh, we're not insured if you get injured and stuff because you're officially not like in yet."
Okay. All right.
So I was like, okay. So obviously, once I passed, then I was in.
Oh, great.
But yeah, press ups, sit ups, and even when I was doing the sit ups, I was like, "He's going, oh, I've got a bus pass," and I said, "Yeah, if you come on my bus, I'm going to charge you double."
So a bit of being cheeky goes a long way, eh?
No, because he goes, oh, wait till I get hold of you when you're in the squadron. He goes, wait, rubbing his hands.
So when's your first engagement then?
Training starts in August. So it's one weekend every month. So it's basically cool. Minimum requirements, 27 days.
Okay, cool. Oh, nice. Exciting.
So it should be funny. Should be funny. Interesting.
We're looking forward to the RAF stories.
Russell Bentley cracked me up. He's like, oh, he wants to hear about me riding, flying the tornadoes.
Speaking of Russell Bentley, he did well this weekend. He ran well, probably didn't do as well as he hoped, but he ran the Brighton Marathon and it was amazing. I think he was 9th or something. 2:28 he ran, but was there first 5 British men under 2:20 with one guy, Peter Le Grice from Bristol. He was 2:16, I think he won in. And then there was Paul Naves, he was second. And Ian Leach. Do you know Ian Leach from Brighton?
No.
He's such a lovely guy. He's a lovely bloke. He's he used to train up in Highgate with us, but he's 43 and he's just run a PB of 2:18. Shows you, doesn't it, that like marathon running, you can carry on doing it, you know, in your 40s and still get faster. He's a real inspiration. There's the dog. There's Achilles shouting in the background. So in the women's race, last year's winner, Helen Davis of Ipswich Jaffa, took the female title. That's two years in a row, and that's around 2:34. Pretty amazing because it was pretty windy and blustering. I think she was on her own for a lot of the time. She was 14 minutes ahead of her nearest rival. So pretty amazing performance there from her. Unfortunately, Athletics Week don't give me any more information on the other females in that field. But there was also amazing 10K in the same competition the same day. There was Nick Gulab. He clocked a course record in Brighton of 28:22.
Whoa!
30 seconds ahead of Adam Hickey, former national champion Adam Hickey. Andrew Hayes was third in 28:56. But to beat those guys by 30 seconds on a 10K is pretty impressive. So it'll be interesting to see what Gulab's going to do this year. And in the same race, 10K for women, 12 again, Steph 12 running really well. She ran 31:58, a minute ahead of her nearest competitor, which is World Cross Country competitor, Mari McLennan. Wow. Oscar Thornhill was third with 33:03. So 12 absolutely smashed it. And Peter Gulab smashed it. So interesting competition. Now I think that's going to be, if you're looking for a fast 10K in Britain, I think that's going to be one of the leading competitors, the best races to go and check out. So that was interesting. Did you see the Boston Marathon finish?
I didn't know.
Oh man, 26 miles came down to a final sprint, and it was unbelievable. This guy, I think it was Felice De Sisa, if I'm saying it right, he was just ahead all the way, and this guy Tirono just the last 5 meters, he just eked his way in front. It was amazing race. So if you get a chance to watch that, pretty amazing. And I think De Gaffer, Workness Cadaver, she won for the women. Good result from Jordan Hesse in third over in Boston. But anyway, that's the results of the weekend. We've got a more important stuff to talk about. We've got my marathon to talk about, a.k.a.
London Marathon, not your marathon. My own. You're going to be, let's be honest, you're going to be mid to back.
Well, I've just been having a look at the elite field, man. There's about 50 elite runners for the men. It's unbelievable. There's loads of guys in there. So it looks like the best field you could ever imagine. Like, just trying to look through the list of names for the men. Eliud Kipchoge, obviously, Farah, Kitata, I think he was second or third last year. Wilson Kipsang, who's won it before. Mozanet Geremu, I'm not sure about Geremu, but I think he's won a number of marathons. Dubai, probably he's run. Abraham Kiptum, have you heard about him? He's the fastest half marathon runner of all time. Daniel Wanjiro, former winner. Temerat Tola, who's a pretty impressive runner. Callum Hawkins for the men. I'm not going to keep going for all these, but there's some amazing runners. That's just the guys that are pictured. And for the women's field, equally amazing. Let's have a look. It's got Mary Cataney, who we tried to get in an interview actually on the show, but she couldn't do it. I couldn't fit it in. Vivian Sherriott, former winner last year, I think. Vivian. We've got Bahani De Barber. Gladys Sharono, who's also won at Berlin. Bridget Koskay, Tadelik Bekele, and two first sort of the leading Brits, Lily Partridge and Charlotte Perdue. Obviously, we should have a quick mention for both Molly Huddle, former interviewee on the show, and Hayley Carruthers. We did the New Year special this year. Hayley was on that, and she's been a really inspiring athlete. Amazing her progress from being a non-runner to being someone toeing the line in the elite field is incredible. So if you can find out about her story, listen to our podcast on the New Year show, a little brief interview with her, but we will hopefully get her on the show probably at some stage to discuss London Marathon. But obviously, all these pale in significance. Well,
the weather's going to be good for London.
Is
at
it?
At the moment.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. What do you mean by good? Is it hot?
Yeah, I suppose good for spectators, bad for racing.
Yeah, okay. I don't mind, but as long as it isn't like 25 degrees or something. But we'll see. I
mean, it's been so cold. Even 14 degrees, people are sweating.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's going to be a bit tough. Last year was really tough. Everyone didn't run the times they expected. It was only 21 degrees, but everyone was oh God, it's so hot. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that. But hey, I'm going to be there. Turn the line, Jermaine. I'm ready. I had a race this weekend, which was nice.
And what happened?
Well, it was that race I told you about where they kind of changed the... Every year they change the distance that you race.
Yeah.
So I ran a 5 miler, and the one guy who's the national champion at cross country, and I think he's national 10K champion over here in Holland, he basically dropped us within a minute. And then it was just me on my own with another guy, Baz. I dropped him, and then he came back at me. But it was so windy and twisty and turny and stuff. And it wasn't. But I did get second. I won a sprint finish. And I was
okay.
You know when you're you're not quite there, but you're not far off. You're fit and you're strong, but you just haven't got any change of pace.
Okay, you got no zest.
I got no zest, and I'm tired at the moment because I'm training a bit and I've got the baby and stuff. So actually, that isn't so bad. And to be honest, you don't need that much zest for a marathon, right?
No, not unless you do the Boston Marathon finish.
Not unless you do the Boston Marathon finish. Yeah, so it's all right. I'm hopefully going to be in good shape for it, but we'll see. I did a workout this morning, 10k, 5k at marathon, so 5k at 80% marathon pace, 5k at marathon pace, and I did it. It wasn't that easy, but I've got another workout tonight, like a super workout, so doing two workouts in one day as my last effort, and I've got 12k progression run, and after that I'm putting my feet up. I'm going to relax. I'm going down Devon. I'm going to eat some chocolate eggs. I'm going to relax, try not to eat too many. So yeah, but
you need to recharge. You need to recharge.
I need to recharge, but definitely. Well, what is your? If you had tips for recharging, you go crocodile, right? What is?
You do, well, you need, carbs, sugar,
Yeah, okay. Loads of
a
that.
good TV program,
Okay, all
like a
right.
big a series, so you could just whore it.
Okay, go all the way through it. Yeah, okay, cool, yeah. And then.
And then abandon your baby and wife.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Too much stress. Get my own room. Yeah. Well, I think actually I
So,
have got my own room, so that's quite good in the days leading up to it.
are we doing predictions then?
Yeah, we thought we'd do something funny this year. We thought we'd try and do a competition. So
Between ourselves.
it's me versus Jermaine, but you can join in too, and we will try and think of a way we can reward people joining in. But also, it's just for laughs. I think if someone loses so badly, they have to join in our forfeit. We'll tell them our forfeit in a minute. But basically, what we're going to do, there's three categories, right? So we've got to choose. Oh no, four categories. No, hang on, five categories.
It's
It's
got to be,
go.
yeah, it's got to be, it can't be even number because it might be dead heat.
Yeah, okay, so five categories. So number one is we've got to get the male and female times, whoever gets closest to those, and it's
Win.
cumulative. So if you said it's you add them together and see who's closest. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay, so the cumulative time for the male and female winner. Okay, so that's the first category. So if I win that, if I get closer, I get a point against you, right? Second one is you've got to name the winner, and we can't have the same one. So you get to choose first. You get to choose first on the men, and I get to choose first on the women. Only fair,
I'll be
right?
generous. I'll be generous. You can have Mo.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So you get to choose first on the men, I get to choose first on the women, and then we do first Brit, right? But on the men's side, we're saying first Brit except Mo. Now we're not getting all Brexit on you, but we just think it's so obvious. We just think it's a bit, we want to make it a bit different. So we're not having, it's first Brit without Mo on the men's and the first Brit in the women's. Right?
okay.
Okay. Because then.
This ain't all white show, is
This isn't no.
it?
We're not scrubbing Mo out of history. We like him, but we are removing him just for the sake of making it interesting. Right? So that's five categories. First male, first female, first Brit in both races, and the closest to the cumulative time. Right. So give us your male time, Jermaine. What do you reckon? I'm gonna write it down.
Let's say 2-4.
2-4. 2-4 on what? You got to give seconds as well.
20 seconds.
204 and 20. Go for the women's.
Let's say 225.
I've won this one, by the way. Just to let you know,
You've.
it's not going to be 225. Have another
What's
go.
it gonna be?
It's
What's it gonna be?
going to be way lower than that, man. The world record's 215, right? And the last
Yeah.
couple of winners have been a low 220s, if not underneath 220.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean they're going to turn up and run that fast.
You want it? 225?
Okay, let's take Chul's advice because my marriage knowledge is bad. I'll say 221.
221 and how many seconds?
45.
45. So I'm going to say 203.
For the men, what seconds?
And 25.
Okay.
And I'm going to say for the women's, we're going to say 2:19:03.
You trying to get me on the
I think I've got this one in the bag. Right, okay. So next one, male winner.
I
Shall I read them out? Okay. I'll give you a clue. His name begins with Elliot. All right. So we've got Eliud Kipchoge, he's the world record holder, greatest of all time, blah 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 blah. So that's one. Mo Farah, we've got Tolle Kitata, we've got Wilson Kipsang, we've got Mozanet Geremu, Abraham Kiptum, Daniel Wanjiru, Tolle, and Callum Hawkins.
I'm going for Kipsang.
You're going for Kipsang, are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, well, in that case, I'm going to take Kipchoge.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, all right, here we go. Kipsang has won before, but he hasn't done much for a few years, so let's see.
He needs the money, so he's going to come out strong.
Jermaine's.
Yeah.
Right, let's look at women's winner. Shall I give you some names?
Yeah.
Okay, so the world record holder is obviously Paula Radcliffe. We've got the world record holder without male pacemakers is Mary Katanin. She's running. Vivian Sherriott is probably the bookies' favourite. She won last year. We've got Bahani Dibaba. I think she's a Dibaba sister, but I can't be sure about that. There's a lot of Dibabas. Gladys Chirona, who won Berlin. We've got Bridget Koskay, who I'm not really sure about. Tadelec Bekele. So she's got Bekele's name. That's good. And then we're looking at Molly Huddle. We've got Lily Partridge and Charlotte Perdue. And I'll mention also Emily Sissons.
I'm going to go for Bekele.
You're going to give it Bekele?
Yeah.
Okay. That's left to centre. I'm going to take Vivian Sherriott.
Okay.
But I want to take Molly Huddle, actually. But I'm not going to. Because she's not going to win. I think she's going to get a second.
And then we've got to do first Brit.
Yeah. So who do you reckon first Brit?
I take Hawkins.
This is for the men? You take Hawkins in first Brit without. Yeah. And the women? Shall I give you? We've got Hayley Carruthers, who I mentioned earlier. We've got Lily Partridge, Charlotte Perdue. Charlotte Perdue did win the big half. But Hayley Partridge is, I think, I don't know which has got the faster time. Maybe Lily, but it's pretty close. Sonia Samuels, just looking who actually entered. Tish Jones, 2:33. Natasha Cockrum, 2:35. Tracy Barlow has run 2:30. And that is it in the elite field for the British women.
I'll go Perdue.
I'll go Partridge.
Okay.
Partridge. So we got it, and then that's it then, isn't it? Or you said Hawkins. So I'm going to take, as you've taken Hawkins, I'm going to take Griffiths.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. That's our prediction.
That's only three categories. That's only three. You know that.
No, we got the time. We got men's winner, women's winner.
Oh, you're splitting them up.
Yeah. And then splitting the last two up. So that's five. Yeah, that should be five.
And then what? And then the most important one.
Yeah.
What about Sean's time?
Oh, yeah, we haven't thought about that. Oh, God. Go on, then. What do you think for me?
You blew up last time because you had the shits. And what did you do? You did 2:39?
No, 2:40, I think. 2:41.
It's the same. 2:39, 2:41, it's the same.
Yeah, forget it.
I reckon you're on 2:32.
Okay. I'm going to go 2:23.
Oh, whoa.
Okay. So
I think I've got that one in the bag.
But that makes six. That makes six things. But that's all right. We'll just go.
And then what? No, because we can make one more. What position do you think you'll finish? Out of the Brits or overall?
Overall.
Okay.
62. No, 50. Forget it. 49.
Okay. I'm going to go 40.
40. Okay. All right. And my time is 2:23 and 49th. And you said 2:32 and 40. 40. Okay. Here we go. So you're going to say a lot of guys are going to be dropping out.
You're damn right, especially if the weather's hot.
A lot of these pigs are going to be dropping out. I don't know why they're pigs, anyway. So that was it. That's cool. That's our prediction. So what will happen, we've agreed off-air that the loser has to run a 10K. Perhaps
the we're both doing a 10K.
We're both doing a 10K coming up soon. Maybe in May.
Soon?
Yeah, we'll work it out.
Wow, that's too soon. That's too soon. Yeah.
Over the summer, we'll do a 10K, at least a 10K, and whoever loses has to go dressed up in fancy dress and go for a fancy dress record over that distance, right?
Yeah. It's going to have to be a really big costume then.
Yeah, and what we'd like you to do is we want you to join in. So try and tweet in, Facebook in, whatever you like to do, tagging us in. If you want to join in and you want to, the way you can do it is by making the predictions, but also if you want to suggest a costume for us to go as, please do it. So that's just to run in, I don't know, an animal outfit, a particular animal, or a priest's outfit, or something like that. So whatever you want. I think that'd be quite fun, actually. I might do it as a priest. Let's do it.
Well, you could go as a nan or something.
Yeah, nan. The fastest nan ever to run a marathon. There's probably some other good nans out there. But yeah, suggesting...
None.
Yeah. So suggest it. You've got all the categories there. So it's cumulative time of the first two runners, male and female, winners, both categories, British without Mo, and Sean's time and position. Okay, that's it. So you can email in and do that. But for our interview today, we've got an important... Well, not an important. For our interview today, we've got an interesting interview with Derek Ray. Now, I ran with Derek at the Big Half recently, and Derek definitely gave me an absolute kick in. He certainly was a few places ahead of me. And Derek had a car accident. I think in a couple of years ago, he had a car accident in Scotland, and he unfortunately lost the use of his right arm. So Derek, before that, was a decent marathon runner. I think he'd run around three, if not just under 3 hours for the marathon. But since then, he's gone on to have an incredible para career. So he's running now times 2:30 and below. He's the current world marathon champion in his category. And he is talking to us in a minute about his preparations for London. So here he is. On this week's show, I am talking to Scotland and Great Britain marathon runner and the current World Paralympics Marathon Cup winner, Derek Ray. How are you, Derek?
I'm very well, thank you, Sean. How are you?
I'm very well, very well. And we're approaching London Marathon. How are you feeling? How's the training been going?
Feeling really good. My training block for this year's marathon has went very, very well. And I always feel year after year, strength and endurance is always improving, and I know the training better and better. I know my body better and better year after year. And yeah, I've done a big block of training from mid-November to Christmas Eve in Tenerife.
Yeah.
I was home for a week, and then I done a month in Kenya at Altitude. Yeah. And I was home for a month, and I went away and done 3 weeks in Tenerife. So yeah, I've had a really good block. I'm fully focused on the task in hand, and I'm just counting down the days until race day now.
Yeah, lovely. And plenty of vitamin D by the sounds of things.
Well, yeah, vitamin D is always good for the recovery, good for the body. So that's always a great excuse for to get away into the sun.
Yeah, lovely, lovely. And we're just speaking off air about the fact that London's going to be also the World Championships this year.
That's right, yes. Every 4 years, it's always the year before the Olympic year.
Yeah.
They have the World Championship event, and this year it's in Doha, which is towards the end of the year. But the World Para Athletics came to an agreement with the London Marathon. So for the last 4 or 5 years, they've always held a World Championship event, whether it be the World Champs or the World Cup, at the London Marathon. So it works well for me. It works well for the other runners. I think the timing of the marathon is good.
Yeah.
And as I said to you off air, to be given the opportunity to run the London Marathon wearing the Great Britain logo on your shirts and your vest. Yeah. The support that draws in, nothing can compare to that.
Yeah, fantastic. So do you start off with the women?
Or just no, the wheelchair men, they set off at 8:55.
Yeah.
And then my classification is T46. So for the listeners who don't know, I was involved in a motorcycle accident. I'm sure we'll go into that. And yeah, I've been left with brachial plexus injuries, so I'm classed as a T46 armed amputee athlete. So I compete against guys who have got a disfigurement like myself, or an amputation above elbow,
yeah,
single or double amputation. We start with the visually impaired runners at 9 a.m, and then I'm sure the elite women go off at 9:15,
right,
and then the elite men and the masses go off at 10.
Okay. So you might have Mary Cartini breathing down your neck at some stage on the field.
Yeah, well, I'm sure 2017, she passed me around 23 miles.
Yeah.
And I knew she was coming because the lead bike came up and said the leading lady's coming. And I thought, this would be quite good company, because I that year I ran the whole race alone.
Yeah.
So Kitani pulled alongside me, and she was hiking. And I looked at her and thought, I think I can hold on to that. And she came into the finish.
Yeah.
That thought came and went within a matter of seconds, because she was motoring on. And she left me like I was going backwards. And the same again. I was in a better state in 2017 last year, just due to the heat and the conditions.
Yeah.
When the leading lady passed me, I was suffering. And luckily that thought didn't enter my head, because I was just looking for the finish at that stage.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping this year I fare up a bit better, and ideally it would be good to be finished before them, but yeah, certainly closer to the finish would be what I'm looking for.
Yeah, nice. And you said that having to be on your own for a lot of the race. Do you think that's going to be the same this year? Have you got a goal for this race in terms of time, or are you just looking to win the competition?
It really depends. Also depends how the other runners run. I've got in my mind, I know how I'm going to run and what pace I'm going to run at, and I know what's comfortable for me, but to be pushing the barriers.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to do is to get into a burn-up, and then, you know yourself, being an experienced runner.
Yeah.
The race starts in the marathon in the last 10K. The last thing I want to be doing is getting to the last 10K and then to think, I'm starting to feel the burn here.
Yeah.
So I want to be the opposite of that. I want to get to the last 10K and think, this is where I'm coming into my strength. So I know what I'm capable of. I know where my limits are. And if there's a race that are going to be within those limits, then I'm happy to race. But 2 years ago in 2017, I let the guys, the front three guys, they went off on a tangent and they got into a race. And one of the guys blew up just after 20 miles. So I passed them.
Yeah.
So it worked out well for me that year. So there's so many things can happen within a marathon, Sean. I'm just going to stick to my own race plan, and then just hopefully that'll carry me through well, and I'm sure it will.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got, you sort of, you're just basically going to get almost time trialing it yourself. Are you used to that? How do you approach that in training to make sure, I guess, training on your own is good, but how do you approach that knowledge that you've just got to stick to your own mind? What sort of things do you do in training to get ready for that?
I just think a lot of it's discipline, and most of all it's experience and confidence in your own ability, and confidence that you don't need anyone to run with you to dictate how you run.
Yeah.
Usually if I'm running within a group, I don't run to their pace. I'm running to the pace I want to run at, and if they go, then that's fine, and if they fall off, then that's fine. We ran the big half a lot together, and there was guys come and went, and we stuck to our own race plan, and in my eyes it worked out well given the conditions. And there was a lot of that race we were exposed, just the two of us, and we were fighting that headwind. Like there's no protection, because we ran basically shoulder to shoulder. I think I'm lucky that I do a lot of my training on my own. I train twice a week with my training group at St Andrews University, and I compete for 5AC. So it's good being in that group environment, but I think I like the discipline and the motivation that's needed to go out and do the hard stuff on your own as well.
Yeah.
And that certainly pays off come race day.
Yeah.
My first GB representation at London was 2015. And I was shocked to be out on the course on my own. There was nobody as far as I can see.
Yeah.
And that was quite an eye-opener and a big realisation for me that this may happen again.
Yeah.
And I went down to the race the following year expecting that. So I think if you're mentally prepared for it, mentally tough, which I feel I am, that's one of my strongest points, is my mental toughness.
Yeah.
Then that pays off well on the race day.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about your accident in 2010. But let's talk before that. Like, how did you get interested in running? Were you interested? What was the spark that got you into the sport originally?
I, as a youngster, you probably find this is quite a common story on the running community. As a young lad, I took up football from an early age. I played at a decent amateur level, and I was 18 at the time, and I wanted to start getting a bit of a physique about me. So I went to my local boxing club to do some circuit training, and the boxers there to in order to shed weight, to make their weigh-ins for the fights, they were doing a lot of jogging or running.
Yeah.
So I thought, I think I'm going to get involved in that and see how I get on. Yeah. But the more I was running, I realised that I was actually quite good at it.
Yeah.
One of the things I enjoyed most about the time playing football was the training. I always loved the hard work that was involved in training. It was always my ambition to be the fittest man on that park, week in, week out. I'm not afraid to admit it, I was never the most gifted or skillful football player, but I done the basics well, and I was a hard worker, and it was a nightmare to play against because I didn't stop.
Yeah.
The more I was running, the more I was enjoying it, and I entered a quite a local 10K to myself, and I ran really, really well. And then my first marathon was in Edinburgh Marathon 2009, and I ran 3:03. And I was wanting to run sub three, but at that point I was quite naive to running. I was just doing it just to keep myself fit. I didn't do it very seriously. I didn't follow a training program. I just ran for the enjoyment of running.
Yeah.
And then so I just basically it was just to keep myself fit, and as it ended up, I gave my football up to concentrate on my running. And yeah, here I find myself now, just living the dream, really.
Yeah, and so take us back to, you said 2009 was your first marathon. Did you then join a club from there?
I was a member of the Ainster Haddies, which is I'm from Fife in Scotland, and they're up the east coast of Fife, quite close to St Andrews.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I was a member of them before the race. I was, but I'd obviously entered the race for my own personal gain. It was nothing to do with being in a club or getting championship points or anything like that. It was for my own personal gain.
Yeah.
I think I only joined a club, so I had like a club to represent when I ran races.
Yeah. Okay.
And at that time, some of my mates who are now my really, really good mates, They were also members of the Haddies, so I kind of joined the Haddies just through my friends.
Yeah, okay. And then obviously, then the accident happened a year later. Was it June 2010? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What happened? What happened to in the accident?
I was coming home from St Andrews. I was working night shift at the time, and I was coming home from St Andrews. I was on a motorcycle, so I had a motorbike at the time. And I don't have any recollection or remember anything at all about the accident. This is what I've been told. There's a town in between where my parents stay and St Andrews, and there's a sharp bend on the way out of the town. I was going around that bend, and then I collided with an articulated lorry. So yeah, it's not the best thing to deal with when you've got no protection, but
yeah.
Post accident, I was in a bad way would be a bit of an understatement. I had quite a serious amount of injuries, and I really was touch and go. My parents and my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, they were told in the evening that they came into the hospital just to really expect the worst, because I think I was given like 10 or 15% chance of making it through that night.
Wow.
They wanted to stabilise me over the Wednesday evening into the Thursday morning, to start the reconstruction to my arm. So the worst of the injuries I sustained is what's called a brachial plexus injury. So the brachial plexus controls the feeling, the movement, and the sensitivity of your arm. So I had damaged a lot of the nerves, and you've got a humerus which goes from your elbow up to your shoulder. I totally shattered that. I shattered my collarbone. I broke all my ribs. I punctured my right lung. I broke my shoulder blade. I took a really, really bad knock to the head. So they were unsure, A, if I was ever going to wake up, B, if I was going to wake up and be compos mentis, or if I was going to wake up with brain damage.
Yeah.
And then they didn't know what the damage had done to my arm. So yeah, it was worrying times, for certainly for my family, for myself.
Yeah.
having no recollection of what happened, and I was very, very confused when I first came around.
How long was that before you came around?
I was in a coma for 6 days.
Yeah.
And then the first, my wife tells me this, we chat about my accident quite a lot, because as you can probably tell, I'm not afraid to talk about it, because it's a part of my life, and it's who I am, and it's made me who I am. But the first Sunday that my wife and my parents came into high dependency to see me, I had no tubes at all in, and when I first came round, I recognised my mum and my wife, and I think that was, like Susan tells me, that's one of the best feelings she had, was then realising that I was going to be okay. Obviously, it was going to take time, but I still had my faculties, I still knew who people were. I still suffer from short-term memory loss now.
Yeah.
If I don't write something down, then it's gone. I'm really bad for forgetting things, but that's really only downside to my accident is that.
Yeah.
Just going back to the running, I'd ran the Edinburgh Marathon just over 2 weeks before my accident. So I ran the marathon, I went away on holiday the following day, I came back from holiday, and I think it was only 2 or 3 days later that I came off the bike and I was in hospital. Given to be a marathon runner, obviously I ran the Edinburgh Marathon, it was 3:12 or 3:15 just before the accident.
Yeah.
So obviously I was really quite fit, and given the physical shape that I was in at that time, the surgeons and the doctor told me after I was out of the hospital and getting checkups that if I wasn't as fit, then I wouldn't be alive today.
Wow.
So when you hear that, you feel like you're running and your fitness. It's more than just a hobby, isn't it?
Yeah.
You feel like you wrote something back and return for help, effectively saving your life.
Yeah. Wow. And in those initial weeks and months, did you think you would ever be able to run again? Were you considering, that was it?
At the time, this was the June 2010. Susan, my wife, had entered the Edinburgh Marathon for the May 2011. So I had, during my time in the hospital, I was in hospital for just over 5 weeks in total, and a lot of it is, I don't remember very much of it. I remember the layout of the ward, but I had various, lots and lots of different visitors, and I don't really remember them, but there's a few things that I do remember. And one of my memories is, I was lying in my hospital bed one evening and I was chatting to Susan, and we came to an agreement that once I was back home and on my feet, and it was always a big goal of mine to return to running. It was one of my main focuses when I got out of the hospital. But Susan and I agreed that when I was going to get back into running, that we would train for the Edinburgh Marathon together. And at that point, I think both of us thought that I'd be very, very lucky if I was able to run 5 miles unassisted. I would have taken that in a heartbeat. And then when I got out of the hospital, I worked tirelessly, extremely, extremely hard with the physiotherapist at my local hospital. I was seeing him at the beginning 3 times a week, and then when I was in hospital as well, Sean, I basically had to start from scratch again. I had to learn to walk again. I damaged my right arm, so I had to learn. I used to be right-handed.
Yeah.
So I had to learn to do all the simple life tasks. I had to learn to write again, brush your teeth, to shave.
Yeah.
So really, I really started from scratch, and I think that was possibly a good thing, because I didn't really remember anything about how it used to be. I just had the attitude or the focus that, well, how is it now going to be?
Right.
And with working with the physiotherapist, just working on building up any strength we can get, I think what helped a lot during that time as well, as I was starting to walk, my in-laws have Labradors, and walking them every day played a huge role in my recovery.
Right.
Because just that 2-3 mile walk every day, every second day, was always adding to the leg strength. And then I always remember that my first run after the accident, and the last run I had was a marathon. My first run was at a local high school to us, and I ran a lap of the football field. And the field was covered in snow, I had Wellington boots on.
Yeah.
And with that one lap, Sean, I don't know how long it took. It probably wasn't fast.
Yeah.
But it's one of the best feelings I've ever had. It was the endorphins that was going through my body.
Yeah.
It was a feeling I'll never forget. And it was at that point I thought, I think there's a part of me beginning to return.
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold, I cut a long story short, I ended up entering the half marathon in May, which would be 6 months after return to running.
Yeah.
And Susan and I actually swapped places, so I ended up running the marathon.
No way.
And I ran it in, I think, 3:33.
No.
It wasn't a race I was wanting to. I was worried about time. I was just wanting to start it and to be. I wasn't a competitive run, just to be in amongst the runners and to feel alive and just to feel like there was a big, big part of me that I never thought would return. Was alive and I was buzzing. The very, very strange thing about that race was the Edinburgh Marathon, the last 6 miles. You're coming back on yourself.
Yeah.
And I think it was 23 miles I passed. There was a runner passed me on my left-hand side. And the guy turned and looked at me. And I looked at him. And it was one of my nurses that was looking after him in the hospital.
Yeah.
And he didn't know at that point that I ran. And I didn't know that Billy ran.
Yeah.
And I think that was Billy was starting to fade. I was starting to find the race tough.
Yeah.
And I think it was a kick up the backside that we both needed. And we finished the race together. And I don't think he was expecting to see me. And I certainly wasn't expecting to see him. And I think it was just what we both needed was to spur each other on to the finish. And that's what running for me is. That's what makes running so unique and it makes running what it is just the bonds and the friendships that running can bring. And
yeah,
there's nothing like it, I don't think, Sean. Nothing like it.
No, absolutely. And obviously that gave you confidence then, and you've gone on from that. What was the next step? You ran that marathon. Did you then start training again full time? Were you able to train in the same way?
Straight after that race, that was May 2011.
Yeah.
The marathon the following year, obviously after that I'd started return to running.
Yeah.
But they penciled in some operations for me to get, so I was going through during that time, I think for the year and a half after that, I was taking 2 steps forward and 5 steps back because I seemed to be recovering. I was getting myself back on my feet and things were going well, and I would go back in for another operation and things would just take so much longer to get back to where I was.
Yeah.
I didn't, after my accident, I didn't work for just under a year and a half. So I had my full focus and attention was to recover as well, as much as possible and to build up as much strength. And luckily I was able to run through the day as well. So that helped a lot.
Yeah. Well, were they quite good about your running in terms of the recovery, the physios? Were they quite encouraging in terms of did it help you in your recovery from that?
Massively. I think the way it helped in the most, Sean, was I was on quite a lot of pain medication for the nerve damage I was getting or the pain I was getting from the nerves.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be on any medication. When I returned to my running, then I came off my medication really quickly. And the physios and the surgeons all thought that was just due to the endorphins I was getting from running.
Wow.
It was kind of overtaking what was getting from my pain relief.
Mm.
And yeah, quite quickly after returning to running, I wasn't on any medication at all.
Wow.
So that, again, it's funny because people run it's easy to get caught up in running for chasing PBs and beating people and coming into it. There's nothing, it's good in the sense that running can be competitive and you can have rivals.
Yeah.
And certainly friendly competitiveness, but running, I don't think people underestimate how much for your health and well-being running has a beneficial impact on that.
Yeah.
And even something as simple as being able to come off medication that was working for me really quite well, purely because I was putting one foot in front of the other, yeah, and reaping in the rewards and benefits from that.
Yeah.
And that's a strong statement, and that's really quite powerful, I feel anyway.
Yeah. Taking back control in a way, and control over your body and what it's doing.
Yeah, you're not relying on medication, and you're not putting stuff down your throat that you're not sure what it actually is, and
yeah.
You're in control of what you're doing, and if you want to run 5 miles or 3K or 10 miles, and you're in control of that, and that nothing can compare to that, I don't think, Sean.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking about you, so you said you had a series of operations at that point. Biomechanically, like, did you had to learn how to run again? It's obviously from a simple biomechanical perspective. If there's no use of your right arm, or little use of the right arm, there's going to be an impact upon that, and in the way you run with your legs. Have you had to work on that? Did you have to work on that quite closely when you started to come back and started to run? Did you get injuries in different places because of the lack of movement in your right side?
It wasn't so much when I first returned to running. It was more so when my running began to become quite serious.
Mm.
So just to fill in the blanks and the gaps, I missed the Edinburgh Marathon in 2012 due to, I just came out of a cast and the surgeons had recommended not putting my arm in my running sling just due to the position it puts my wrist in, and it would put too much strain on my arm. So I ran in 2013 and things were starting, the ball was starting to roll, on the whole para-sports side.
Yeah.
There's a local organisation to where I live called Disability Sport Fife. The president of that, a guy called Richard Brickley, has been amazing for me. He's opened up so many doors, and he's been involved in para sports for a good 20 or 30 years now. So if what he doesn't know about para sports isn't worth knowing.
Mm.
He's got a lot of good contacts. And yeah, so when I first met Richard in 2011, the talk was hopefully of trying to get to London 2012.
Mm.
But it was just too much too soon. There was so many hurdles to jump over and we didn't have enough time.
Mm.
So I got the operation in I think it was the end of April 2012. I missed the marathon. But I was competing well in local races, and I had been told, I'd been made aware that the powers that be down at British Athletics were starting to keep an eye on me.
Mm.
In order for things to progress even further, I knew the best place for me to go would be to get the London Marathon. Now, you know, to get through into the London Marathon to the ballot it's a task and a half.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I knew the best way for me to get in was going to be through Good for Age. So I trained really well for the Edinburgh Marathon in 2013. And I think the Good for Age time was 3:05 at that stage.
Mm.
And I ran the 2013 marathon in 2:53.
Wow.
So I knew I was going to get into London. And in January 2014, that's when my coach and I started working together. So I wasn't making my own training plan. I wasn't doing the same types of runs night after night. I was following a training program now, and I was following it quite rigorously, and I was quite basically, I love routine, I love following a plan, and I was doing exactly what the program had down for me.
Yeah. So you were just saying, you ran 2:53 without the use of your right arm, just on training that you come up with yourself.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. Yeah. That's amazing. Incredible.
And I think certainly with the marathon, and I said earlier on about mental strength, the marathon in particular, a lot of it's mind over matter. If you tell yourself you're beginning to hurt or you're whatever, things will start to grow from that and get bigger.
Mm.
It has the opposite effect. If you're telling yourself you're feeling good and nothing's going to hold you back, and I've always had that attitude towards my rehab and my recovery, and I think that's partly why I find myself in the position I'm in today. So I ran the Good for Age marathon in 2014, and I think I ran 2:47. I'm sure that was the time. And then straight after that marathon, I went over to Berlin to get what's called IPC classified.
Right.
So to compete in a para event, you've got to be internationally classified. So to break it down and to make it into easier terms to understand, when you go through classification, you're basically, the classification panel are checking that your disability falls into the criteria that you're wanting to compete in. And then luckily for me, I was classified quite easily, quite well. And there's a panel that check you. They basically sit you up on a bench and they ask you to do certain movements. They see what use you've got of your arm, what strength you have. And then a few days later, they watch you competing.
Right.
And it was after that, I then started to get support through Sports Scotland. And it was then I started working with a strength and conditioning coach. I was starting to get issues with my hips and my knees just purely because my running posture was way, way out of line, having one arm in a sling.
Yeah.
And in my left arm, I was, if you can imagine looking at a question mark, that's the kind of the shape of my body. It used to be really twisted. My hips would be way out of line from my shoulders. And I think I was finding a way just to compensate and to get more strength and energy through what I was lacking in both arms. And then I've been working with the S&C coach since the beginning of 2015. That's where we've made the most gains, I think, is through that, because that's been massive to my running.
Yeah, and your efficiency, I guess, of movement.
It's efficiency, economy and injury prevention. Touch wood, I'm currently touching my head.
Yeah.
touch wood, I've not had any serious injuries. I've had the niggles that come with doing the loading and the running that we do.
Yeah.
But I've had nothing too serious, and I think that's a big part of that is down to doing what I do in the gym twice a week. And yeah, I can't be any more grateful to the guys that helped me than I already am.
Yeah, fantastic. And obviously you've gone on to run 2:33.
And yeah.
I was going to ask, what do you think has been you said with the strength and conditioning, but is there anything else you think has been like, what reason would you give for your development from, 3:03 before the accident to now going to 2:33? What's been the real change in your training or change in you that's produced that kind of performance?
I think it's been a number of things, just to tick them off the list. The first one has to be experience. The more you run, the more experience you get. You know what to expect. You know how to handle it.
Yeah.
And I think knowing what's going to be coming, knowing how it feels to get to 20 miles, knowing how the last 5K feels in a marathon, how the burn feels, what to expect, that plays a big part. The more you know this as well, the more you train, the harder you work, the more you go in confidence. I think it's very, very important to not to get overconfident, but having a level of confidence in your ability, and you know how hard you've worked to put yourself in the shape that you're in to be on the start line, and to look at your competitors and think, well, there's nothing more that I could have done. So if these guys are going to beat me today, they're going to be in better condition than me, and it's as simple as that. And also as well, Sean, what motivates me is to, when I think back to the position that I was in 2010, to be told, or for my family to be told, that there's a strong possibility that I may not make it through the next few hours, and to now find myself in the position I'm in, living the life that I now live, to be what I class on a daily basis is to be living the absolute dream. And I've got hundreds of people to thank, and I can't thank them all personally because there's too many to thank. But if these guys see it in the local paper, on social media, in the news, or whatever, if they guys can see that that I'm doing well or I've achieved whatever.
Yeah.
If they could take a sense of pride from that, and that's my way of personally thanking them, because I would never be in the position I'm in today if it wasn't for the surgeon who got me, or the paramedics that came to me that evening, down to the physios, the S&C coaches that work with me today. I would never be in the position I'm in. So that motivates me massively.
Yeah.
Massively. And if that doesn't get me motivated, then I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely feel that.
And
you're able to now to you are training full time as an athlete. You're able to kind of, you're not working at the moment.
Yeah, no, I've been training full time for but 2.5 years now.
Yeah.
So the thing that's been people say to me, it's funny because people say to me that I've got an easy life because I don't work, and a lot of people's eyes, all I do is run. Yeah. I'm running like 13, 14 times a week. I'm doing 2 gym sessions a week. So I don't train any more than I did when I was working, but what the advantage I've now got is I recover a lot better, and I could focus on recovery.
Yeah.
And I could focus also on my nutrition because I'm making food before I go to training. So when I come in, I don't have to stand and make dinner because my wife, she works in quite a far away from home, so she commutes a lot for her work.
Yeah.
But I say to people that if anybody took a week or 2 weeks doing what I do on a daily basis, I think they would think it's a lot harder than what they actually think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't complain. I never complain. And as I say, I'm very, very honoured and privileged and blessed to be in the position I'm in today. And it's something I never take for granted. And yeah, I just that's what motivates me as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Looking forward, are you coming up to your 30s now, or are you just into
30s? Yeah, I'm 33 and 34 in October.
Okay. Well, what do you want to do next? What's your goals over the next coming years?
Obviously, the big one and the pipeline for between now and next year has to be going to Tokyo.
Yeah.
When I got selected for Rio, I think the big thing about Rio was being able to class myself as a Paralympian, and that will always be with me. I'll never forget that, and that will never leave me. But now I don't want to just be a number. I want to be a competitor. I want my fellow runners or fellow competitors to look at me and think, oh no, that guy's running. I'm going to have to raise my game to beat him.
Yeah.
That's where I want to be.
Yeah.
So I want to Tokyo as the big target. The target at the minute is London. That's been the target since I ran London last year. The following day, my mind was already focusing on getting into shape for the marathon next year, which is now this year.
Yeah.
After London, we'll just restock, and then I think we'll know from the performance in London and how things are going to stand and pan out for the second half of the year.
Yeah, fantastic. And I know a lot of our listeners will be coming into marathons now. We've probably got a couple of weeks left to go before the big race. Do you have like a taper tip for our listeners? One taper tip that they can take on for this London Marathon, or any marathon they're doing at the end of April?
Yes, and the one tip that I've got comes down to 3 words: trust the taper.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very easy to think you get into a psychological battle, certainly in your taper week or taper 2 weeks, and as you're starting to wind down, lower down the mileage, your energy levels are starting to rise, and you've got to fight off the urge to go for a run. You're thinking psychologically, I'm getting unfit, I'm starting to lose my shape, you could possibly think I'm starting to put on weight.
Yeah.
That's very, very easily done. I think what you don't realise is your body's still making those gains, those adaptations, when the body's still working when you're not physically working.
Yeah.
I've been through that. I've had all those thoughts and that experience. I've now tapered the way I taper now, I've done it, this will be my sixth year in a row, and I know it works very, very well for me. The way I do my taper is I always have I do quite a big fartlek session on a Monday. I always do the fartlek session, and after that, it's basically just easy running. You're keeping the legs ticking over. There's no double sessions. I think the furthest I run will be 7 or 8 miles.
Right.
And certainly the days leading up to the race, I think on the Friday and the Saturday, I only have an easy half hour shakeout run.
Yeah.
You're basically just keeping the mind active, the legs ticking over. But the one piece of advice I would have with the taper is learn to just, you have to trust it. If you start to have any doubts, then you're going to take that negative energy onto the start line. You want to go to the start of the race feeling physically and mentally prepared, strong and sharp, and know whatever that race is going to throw at you, you're going to take it on the chin and run through it.
Yeah, fantastic. Great advice. And I'm conscious I'm keeping you quite a long time, but I've got three quick fire questions I ask to everybody we interview.
Yeah.
And they are, the first one is, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
Anywhere running?
Yeah. It could even be like a moment running. So it could be like, you could even have Rio 2016 and change the way you ran. Anywhere, like, it could be a race, it could be a beautiful place, anywhere.
Oh, wow. I think the one place I've loved to run was when I ran through Central Park.
Yeah.
It was just an amazing and surreal experience.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would go back to the Central Park purely because my wife would love to go back to the shop, so kill two birds with one stone.
She could stay busy, you could have a nice long run. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Second question is, can you recommend us something? So it could be like an inspiring book, film, TV show, or it could be like an experience you think our listeners should definitely try.
My go-to film or documentary for motivation is Breaking 2. I've watched it, I think it's you're looking at 30, 40 times now. I always watch it the evening before a big race. I watch it before London every year. I can listen to Eliud Kipchoge talking for hours and hours. I just think he's the most motivational or inspirational. He's the best marathon runner in history, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
and what he achieved on that day is that can motivate and inspire anybody. So Breaking 2 would be my
perfect. And my next question is probably going to be linked to that last one. Is in your opinion, what is the greatest endurance performance of all time?
It has to be Kipchoge at Berlin.
Yeah,
it has to be.
Yeah,
I think that overtakes the Breaking 2 attempt because that was done solo, and I watched it on a live feed. And strangely enough, it looked like he was enjoying himself. That's the mad thing about it is, it looked like he was just out for a jaunt, and what he was running at like 4:38, 4:39 pace.
Yeah,
it's frightening,
crazy.
So Berlin would be, that's going to be a hard one to beat. So it'll be interesting to see how he runs in London.
Yeah, Christ. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it last time he was there? He almost broke it, but didn't know he was going to break it. And I think he's run 2:02s or 2:03, and he didn't even realise he was that close to it. But let's see if he's ready.
I think he asked for 61-minute half marathon pace, and they took him through at 61s. But I think, like most guys last year in London, he was beginning to feel the race quite, was taking its toll just due to the conditions.
Yeah.
But there's one figure that always sticks out in my head is when there's a photograph circulating on social media, and it was Kipchoge coming up the mile, and it was just, his form was absolutely unbelievable, and that was just over 26 miles into a run, and it looked like he was just starting.
Yeah, crazy.
And I met him in London last year, and when I was out for my Saturday run, I actually ran with him in the park that I was in.
Yeah.
And he's a nicer guy you would meet. He's happy to post for photographs, sign autographs until the last person's away.
Yeah.
He's just a very, very humble guy. And like the guy that you see and you hear in interviews, that's how he is in real life. He's such a positive person. And he's just a really good role model for the sport, and He's just an amazing guy.
Yeah, fantastic. Excellent. Well, I better let you get on and get some recovery time in. But we wish you success for London. Fingers crossed, everything goes to plan on the day, and the weather's not too mental like it has been last year. And it's nice and relaxing, and you have a great performance.
Perfect. That's great. Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me on the show. It's very much appreciated and good to be a part of it.
Great stuff. Thanks, Derek. So nice interview there with Derek. We are rooting for him in the race on the 28th. We hope he has a good run and he comes home with some medal. So I was going to say some medal bacon, but you can't really have medal bacon, can you? So I'll just leave that. I hope he comes home with a medal.
Yeah.
But anyway, this week is also, we're recording this on Wednesday. So we're recording it on Wednesday the 17th, is that right? Or the 16th of April?
17th.
And yesterday was the closing date for our final Soar Running Grassroots Hero competition. So we've been asking people over the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, to send in their nominations for their unsung heroes of running. So people who have made a big difference to their performance, or they made it to their lives in a way, their enjoyment of athletics and everything outside of that. So we've had loads of good nominations. We've got a few more we're going to read out. The decision to see who's going to be awarded the prize, but the prize is, I should mention that, is Soar Running have kindly donated two tops. They're elite tempo tops. They're really great pieces of clothing. They've donated two of those. One of them will go to the nominator and one of them will go to the nominee. So by voting, whoever's going to win this is going to give themselves and their unsung hero a fantastic prize. So thanks a lot for Soar Running for backing this competition, and it's great that they are involved. They help a lot of running clubs out across the UK with their kit, and I think they are producing a quality grassroots running brand, which I think we should all get involved with. So we're going to leave them to make the decision. We've had a couple more. I will just mention,
because otherwise it might be biased if we're picking.
Going to be biased because you've got a lot of Kent AC athletes, which is Jermaine's old club, and we've had a lot of Highgate athletes, which is my old club. So obviously we've got to take that decision out of our hands and give it to someone else who is a bit more impartial. But I'm just going to read a couple more. We've had a couple since last week. So we've had another one from Paul Martelletti. People will know or maybe heard of Paul Martelletti, one of the top marathon runners in the country.
And
yeah,
he's got a world record for marathon in fancy dress.
I think someone's taken that off him now. But he
didn't. Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, no, you didn't. He also is a man who stole my style. It's no coincidence, but I got the long hair.
What? He gets is that hair. Is that the same as you both stole it from Samson and Delilah?
Yeah. The thing is, now he's got lovely long flowing like mine are too curly. They're just getting worse, so I've shoved mine off. But Paul is a long haired aficionado, same as Mark Gordian. Mike Gordian over in the US. He's a long haired runner. He wears his headband, stealing my style, obviously. But fair play to him; he's a better runner than I am. And he's nominated.
Back to the story.
He's nominated Peter McHugh. So okay. You know, I already had a nomination for Pete McHugh, so this is two nominations, so pretty good. Obviously, Pete McHugh's touching a lot of people's... That came out wrong. He's not touching a lot of people. He's making...
Don't worry. People's calling the cops now. Calling the cops.
He's helped a lot of people, and he's touched their lives. Nothing. I'll leave it there. Okay. So he said, his message is, I have to nominate Peter, as he's definitely an unsung grassroots hero. Whilst many of the athletes he interacts with will thank him after a session, his time and effort is probably taken for granted due to his good nature and rock-solid reliability. Peter is passionate about running and coaching and always has time for others. I've known Peter for over 10 years, and alongside being a very successful businessman, he still managed to find the time to fit in his running-related activities. You can find him down at Mile End Track virtually every Tuesday evening, where his legendary surprise sessions are worth the trip alone. Maybe he was inspired by Forrest Gump's Life is a Box of Chocolates, as you really do never know what you're going to get until minutes before the start. Some of the best have to be when you're told half the session, only to find out later there's a but wait, there's more moment. Perhaps I should have smashed that last rep now. Another memorable moment was a group snow clearing of lane one as a warm up. That where there's a will, there's a way. Sorry, I don't know why I'm not reading this. Peter's invariable at the hill session on Saturdays and a long run on Sunday, and will even act as a bit of a taxi service if you can meet him at predetermined time and place. Going beyond this, his business and running passions have met with the Run Fast Elite Management Endeavour, the Running Works Sports Star, London's largest independent running store, and a spin off from this store is the running community Peter wants to nurture with regular group runs and runner friendly events and special guests. And there's no doubt that Peter goes above and well beyond all the name of running and for others. So that's a really nice story there from Paul. Interesting about those sessions. That was fantastic. We've also had another one from Anthony Yu. So Anthony's his grassroots here is Marathon Sam. So I look at Marathon Sam. He said Sam has worked tirelessly to promote grassroots running, making the sport so accessible to many people. She works full-time as a police officer and living with kidney disease, she still finds time to raise thousands of pounds for charity. And Sam, I've been looking at some information about Sam. She is one of the founders of the Run Together movement. So Sam runs a group in Yorkshire. She founded an inclusive running group there, and England Athletics have taken, as far as I can see, England Athletics have, with Sam's help, have started a Run Together program, which is encouraging those into the sport and those who maybe aren't so, those who are put off by running clubs and that sort of thing to get involved and to start running. So Sam's done a great job encouraging loads of people to join in. She founded the Trail Snails group up in Yorkshire, a free running group in Bingley, and she evidently is doing a lot. She's her Twitter profile says she's got a pair of dodgy kidneys, but I know that's kind of making light of it. She had various problems with her kidneys, and it's amazing that what she has been doing. So Marathon Sam, a great nomination there. And I think I had just one more. Oh yeah, I had a couple here. So I had one from Bethany Murray. She's nominated Mark Lloyd. Mark Lloyd, along with Philip Adele, leaves the Cottage Group on a Tuesday night in Battersea Park. The Cottages up there. Every week without fail, Mark is down the park on a Tuesday night, setting a session around 40 of the best runners in London. The Cottage is made up of runners from clubs all over the country come together, thanks to Mark, to form what is one of the most high-quality distance running groups in England. Mark always seems to be there cheering athletes on around England, whether it's up in Leeds to the National or he cycles across London to a Lee Valley track race on a Wednesday night. If there's a Cottage athlete racing, Mark will always be there. His weekend updates on Facebook must require hours of scrolling through results, as every athlete gets a mention, whether they compete in the World Cross or done an obscure park run. So many athletics clubs are grateful to Mark for the effort he puts into the athletes, help the athletes compete, and many national cross-country and relay medals wouldn't have been won without his sessions. So thanks. That's a great one, Bethany, about Mark Lloyd. And the final one we've got is from Emmy Collange. Emmy's a former interviewee on the show. She's a former European, I think, champion at mountain running. And she's nominated Maddie, who's her mum, Maddie Collange. It's not because she's my mum, definitely not. Nor is it because she's finally come back from her own torn tendon issue as a 69-year-old with huge ambitions to climb back up the rankings. It's because huge numbers of new runners that she's encouraged to join Mansfield Harriers through her Fit to Run and her Mansfield Runners groups. We're talking huge turnouts every single week and new runners on a weekly basis. She approaches the coaching sessions tirelessly and has endless patience for everyone in the group. She's also a knack for encouraging them to want more, to run more and partake in local cross-country and road races. Not just half marathons in big cities that some people think are the only option. So basically, it's for keeping Mansfield's running scene alive. And you have to admire her occasionally pretty ropey Instagramming attempts to champion each of the runners in her group. She's 69 after all. So a nice one there from Emmy. Really good nomination for her mum. That's two nominations for mums. We like mums.
Two, three, Reagan.
Two. We had Emmy and Reagan. They both nominated the mums. But yeah, perfect. They've been some great nominations. We have one more that I just remember, which is from Mark Hookway, who nominated Dave Norman from Altrincham. So do you know Dave Norman?
Yeah.
He's nominated from by Mark Peter. Says he seems to know just about every runner north of the border. He seems to know just about every distance runner north of England and beyond. A great club and grassroots supporter. Plus, he's very passionate about the sport. My one memory of Dave Norman is I was running in when I was like just coming through. I was running in Liverpool in the cross country out there.
Yeah. And
Dave was making some obscene noises. He was like going, ah, ah, and he was talking to himself. He was like, come on, Dave, come on. It was so funny. Yeah, he was trying to get himself back in the race. I think he'd gone off pretty hard and he was struggling through, but it was, yeah, I'd never seen someone be so loud and vocal, shouting at themselves, trying to get their act together. Yeah, it was funny. But yeah, good nomination from everyone.
Yeah, he's a good guy, Dave.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, that's it. That's all our nominations. We will let everybody know in the next week who is the champion, and we'll try and get them for two interviews. Hopefully to go out on the week of the 6th of May after London Marathon. We'll do like a review show of that race, look at who's won and those prediction contests, but also try and interview the two grassroots heroes that Saw has kindly been a part of. So, yeah, nice one. What's your plan for the weekend, Jermaine?
I'm taking it easy.
Taking it easy. You've done some hard work. You had your Saturday ruined by a RAF fitness test.
I won't say ruined, but yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. And I'm going to be in the land of my birth. Well, not the county of my birth. I'm going to be in Devon. So I'm just over the border from Dorset where I was born. But yeah, first Easter with the cousins and the baby. It's going to be exciting, eating chocolate eggs.
Yeah, that's the best bit about Easter, chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I'm not a big chocolate fan, so... Yeah, I'm not sure how that's
going to
go.
Save me your egg. we call that payment.
Yeah. Perfect. Nice one, Jermaine. Speak in a bit.
All right. See ya. Bye.
Bye.